Hello and welcome to the Professional Horror Podcast, the podcast that only comes out on the full moon. I am your host, the wonderful and very pretty Chris Donovan, and I am joined by not one, but two special guests this episode, the Bridget and Ginger to my Sam. It's Megan Pendergast and her sister, Julia Pendergast. How's it going, friends?
It's going good. How about you, Julia?
Yeah, it's going good.
Nice.
How about you?
I'm just dandy, as a matter of fact. We're talking about movies, you know? Y'all may remember Megan from her previous appearance on the Professional Horror Podcast, where we discussed The Shining, but Julia is making her first appearance on the show, and I, for one, am stoked to have y'all on with me to talk about this movie. Talking about Ginger Snaps today.
Yes, thank you for having us. Yes, I'm impressed by your radio voice. Me too. It's really great.
Thank you.
I'm like alternately like nasally, but then also kind of low pitched. It's an interesting combination. And
it took a few episodes to boil it down to my performance voices. But hey, but since it's the first episode in ages, because I'm just the best at being productive, we're going to start off with our old classic First Blood, which if you've listened to the show before, you know how it goes. We ask everyone their favorite horror movie and their favorite subgenre of horror movie, so that way you guys can get a nice little insight into how we view horror movies, so you know what perspective we come in through, you know, when we break down this movie in particular. Me, I'll go first, just, you know, off the bat. If this is your first episode, you haven't heard me say it a million times by now. My favorite horror movie of all time is 1984's A Nightmare on Elm Street, and my favorite subgenres are slashers and creature features.
We love creature features.
Yes. I have an entire DVD case just stacked full of like B creature features, and it's just
that's a thing of beauty. Julie and I were recently I'm sure stoned and looking through like Amazon and Hulu and everything, and Julie I think was chanting creature feature. So I did my best.
Yes. What's they're the best thing?
It's funny because it's like, I wonder what I responded the first time, because it is for me, like, it changes a lot. I think right now, and let me know if this doesn't count because it's also a comedy, it would be What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, it counts. It's vampires. I count that.
So it's like that, like, is probably right now top of mind my favorite horror movie. I also, Julie and I have been getting into slashers as well. We watched 5 of the 12 Friday the 13th so far, and they really are remiss in not having a 13th, because that would make so much sense.
Yeah, they're mired in lawsuits right now, so they can't, with a copyright ownership, because the writer of the first film reclaimed ownership after like 35 years, which you can do through the law, but the director is like, no, he's an employee, he's not a freelancer, and they're like, that's not how contracts work, but he keeps fighting it. And then he was like, well, he just wrote the first one, he didn't write Jason as the mass slasher, so he doesn't own that. And it's just like,
well, yeah, it was interesting how long it took them to develop Jason into like
it is
what we know him as, so that's very interesting.
What's a really fun fact about the lawsuit, there's this one entertainment lawyer who's been like breaking down lawyer speak on Twitter for all of us horror people who are like, I don't know what any of this means. This lawyer used to be an actor, and he was Shelley in Friday the 13th Part 3.
And that fucker. And that's where Jason got the mask.
Yep.
That's where he got the hockey mask. He was whatever you call it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and he's the one who's just like,
before then. Yeah.
He's like translating legal speak online for all of us who don't know. And it's really kind of fun thing.
Of course, that nerd is a nerd.
He wasn't much for acting, so I'm happy that he found a new career path.
Yeah.
Me too. And I'm also happy that, like, you know, to be killed by Jason and get the Halloween mask taken off of you is a pretty epic way to go out.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so I guess it's slasher, and then I like psychological as well. Mm-hmm.
That's hard. Favorite horror movie? I'm going to go with The Exorcist.
Oh, because so
it's
good.
The best horror movie I've ever seen.
It's really good.
But it's like, I don't think I could watch it again. I was so scared I cried. I was so afraid. Like, I was very afraid of that, but it was great.
And what's weird about The Exorcist for me is, like, I watched, like, all of the Exorcist, all of the demonic things, just, like, straight face. Like, this is good. This is really good, but it didn't do anything for me. Yeah. What got me was that MRI scene where her, like, blood's, like, flying out of the tube. I was just like,
Spinal Tap. Fucked up. Ugh. That was very scary. And also the demonic things very much scared me as well.
Yeah. I couldn't believe how much it held up.
Yeah, it was really good. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did, and I really liked it. But like that, I was also second tied was The Shining. I love that. Mm-hmm. Great movie, and the book too. Great. Didn't you do that on The Shining?
I did on The Shining. So we talked about the book versus the movie, yep. and I think I landed on the movie, liking the movie a little. But it's hard to say because I love both.
Yeah, The Shining is like this weird, like I don't know, otherworldly thing in horror. It's just such a paradox of a film to me. I don't know.
I don't even find it scary, honestly. Really? Yeah. Like, it's like, you know, building dread and all that. But
I find it like so interestingly done. Like, I think it's like one of the few movies that I watch where it's not even just every scene, it's like every like shot. Mm-hmm. I find like it's very interesting. Every like it's so like visually kind of stunning and like really interesting to watch, and the things are going on in the background. So I think that that's like a really interesting layer to it as well.
Yeah, there was just a thing today. Cary Fukunaga, I think, hope I'm pronouncing that name. He was originally going to make an adaptation of It, and it was in production for a while, and then it just the wheels fell off, and then we got the version that we got. He just today came out with a thing who said like, if I were to have done it, it would have been more of a dramatic horror like The Shining. And my first thought was, what does that even mean? The Shining is such a very specific movie that anytime anyone says it's like The Shining, I'm like, it's either a ripoff of The Shining or it's just such a nebulous term to be like, it's like The Shining, because nothing's like The Shining.
I agree. I don't think I can think of a single thing that's like The Shining. I think the Shining is The Shining, kind of like Jaws. It's like, you can't be like Jaws. Yeah. You're Jaws or you're an imposter.
You need John Nicholson.
You need, here's Johnny.
He's bad-addled these days.
He's bad-addled. You're using, you need Shelley Duvall, who's like not like, it's interesting because it's like you can tell she's not really necessarily a very strong actor, but it's like she's so terrified to her core that I really root for her.
And she's also kind of annoying, so you get why he wants to slap her. No, I like her, but
we'll see. What I think that's really interesting with I don't want to. Sorry, I'll stop myself.
I was going to go off on another tangent because like as much as I loved the Dr. Sleep movie that came out, like you were talking about with that, the actress who was playing Wendy and doing a Shelley Duvall impression, I thought she nailed it. I thought she
did a really good Shelley.
Did a really good job. But when they had the not Jack Nicholson, Jack Nicholson.
I forgot about this. Yeah.
Oh my God. Like that scene is so good on paper, but he's just sounds so nothing like Jack Nicholson that it just kind of pulls you out.
I guess maybe like nothing's like The Shining except for The Shining. Like who's like Jack Nicholson but Jack Nicholson? Some people say Christian Slater, but
if you watch Heathers, he's clearly doing his best Jack Nicholson impression. Doing his best,
and I do like love Heathers. I do like.
Oh, it's such a good movie. Yeah, it's greetings and salutations.
My favorite subgenre is probably horror comedy.
I love horror.
Even though Exorcist is not horror comedy.
No, that's the opposite of comedy.
But I do like horror comedies.
Yeah.
Or it's pretty much if I like it, I know it when I see it. I like slash. I like everything if it's done well or badly that it's enough that it's enjoyable.
Of course, like that's always the best.
Yeah,
like I like Scream and that's like horror comedy. But you're right. There's certain things like Fear Street. I felt like it was enjoyable.
It was silly, but I had so many qualms.
Yeah, qualms, but it was fun.
I really liked the Fear Street. That just as a whole, especially like we were just talking about Friday the 13th. Spoiler alert for people who end up watching my top 10 movies of the year at the end of the year. Fear Street as a trilogy is probably going to make it at some point because I thought it was a lot of fun. But like Friday the 13th, my favorite two Friday the 13th movies are not Friday the 13th movies. They're the Fear Street 1978 movie and The Final Girls, just because I feel like the movies that were like homaging Friday the 13th are just way better than Friday the 13th for some reason.
Yeah, I love The Final Girls.
The Final Girls was great. We watched that recently.
I'm an Adam Devine head.
She loves Adam Devine.
Yeah, that's where he met his almost wife. Mm. God bless you.
Yep, she's the badass who gets blown up. Spoiler alert for Final Girls, if anyone's like, what, how many, 10 years behind?
I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, wow, this movie's really good. And then the ending, I'm like, why am I crying at a horror movie? This doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you're right. That did kind of remind me of that Fear Street now that you say it.
Yeah.
But I didn't connect those before.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, you're right. But I think Julia and I, not to speak for Julia, both talk about this, that horror movies, like horror is the best genre when it's done well. Mm-hmm. But I think as a genre, it's probably done least well out of most genres. Like, it's like so easy to, like, I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe it's budgets or maybe it's because you're obviously not Oscar baity. So you're not getting like the creme de la creme of actors, but it's like they're often poorly done, but when they're well done, I find them the most worthwhile.
What I think is funny, because I agree with you, but I also think horror is the best when it's also really bad.
That's true.
Like, yeah. I'd rather watch a sci-fi original movie than, like, an Oscar bait drama film of any time.
Yeah. It can be very cringeworthy when it takes itself too seriously.
Yeah. Like, it's just sad when it's just, like, it's just okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to embrace the bad.
Like, I watched a movie a couple weeks ago. I think it was called The Girl Who Got Away. It was a woman who escaped from a murderous mother who abducted children, and then she ended up murdering all of them, and then there was one kid who got away, and then 30 years later, mm-hmm. she escaped from an insane asylum. She's like, oh god, she's coming after me next. And it was just like boring. Ugh. This was a cool concept.
Yeah. We watched Jaws 2 for the first time recently, and it was one of the most boring movies I've ever watched. Like, it was dull. It, like, lost all of the positive attributes of the first movie, and it retained most of the cast. It was just whatever magic was there was gone, and it was interesting to kind of see how something could, like, lose its shimmer.
I like Jaws 2, but I think I like it because it devolves into a weird, like, schlocky B-slasher movie, but instead of a slasher, it's a shark.
It's personal.
Yeah, he gets, like, the burned face, and he's just like...
Yeah, that's true. But he didn't even hardly kill any of those little fuckers. Like,
yeah, I know. It was like, they're all paddling in the water. I'm like, oh, God, they're shark meat. I can't wait to see, like, what happens. And then it's like, the older son's just knocked out and taken out of the equation, and there's no... That tension's completely unexplored. Yeah. And the young son screams a lot, and the one girl who's nice to him gets killed, and then everyone else survives. It's like, come on!
Yeah. It could also be, I remember Megan, when you were first watching it, you texted me that. It could also be the fact that I've seen Jaws 3 and Jaws 4. Jaws 2 is Citizen Kane compared to those movies. Like, good God.
Well, we could blame Friday the 13th for watching a sequel. It's like, these sequels are good. Maybe all sequels are good. No.
No. But it's like, because I thought 1 and 2 are, like, pretty similar. I could see someone ranking 2 over 1. I think for...
Not of Jaws.
No, not of Jaws. For Friday the 13th. And for me, so far, what is it? The fourth one, I think, is the... Yeah, the fourth one, I think, Feldman is the best. The Feldman one. The Corey Feldman one was my favorite. And yeah, then it was... good.
They're all very enjoyable, though.
Yeah, they're all fun in their own little ways.
Yeah.
It gets a little off the rails. I mean, 6, I think, is the, as far as pure quality goes, it's the best. Jason X is my favorite just because it's the dumbest one by far.
Yeah.
But 6 is pretty good.
We have to get that next free trial under my name, and then we're gonna watch the remaining movies, and we'll give you our definitive ranking. Nice. Well, it might be different.
7, 8, and 9 get a little.
We sat through, what was the one? 5.
5 was bad, but.
What's funny about those movies, too, is that 4, 5, and 6, the main character is Tommy Jarvis, but he's played by a different actor in each one of those three movies.
Oh, my God.
And the thing is, I wish they kept Feldman. Could they not hold on to Feldman?
I don't know.
I don't know what their deal was, because, like, he was, like, good. He was engaging. Like, same with his sister. Like, the whole thing, and then also the teens with Crispin Glover. Mm-hmm. It was, like, the whole thing was, I thought, really engaging and well done, and I cared, even though you knew that pretty much all of, and then it did end up being all of, the teenagers in the cabin were gonna get killed. It was mm-hmm. like there was like 3 that I actively didn't want to die, mm-hmm. which is high for a slasher movie for me.
the sixth movie, Tommy Jarvis, I think his name is like Tom Matthews, but it's spelled like Thom for some reason.
Yep.
I think he's good, and he also goes on to be like, he was did the motion capture for the video game that came out. He's been in fan films. He's the one who's like, I'm Tommy Jarvis, god damn it, and I'm taking this role to the grave. And I respect him for that.
Feldman has enough things to be.
Yeah.
I think Feldman said he wants to come back, but I think it's just because he wants to come back full stop, and he'll take any option to come back.
Yeah, that's I'm fair. Tommy Jarvis.
Now. I'm Tommy Jarvis, motherfucker.
Yeah. All right. Let's dig into, since we've talked a lot about movies, because that's what we love to do here, the Professional Horror Podcast.
I like to talk till my voice goes out.
Let's finally dig into Ginger Snaps. We start off in the town of Bailey Downs, which I love the name of the town just because it reads like a Goosebumps town name to me, just because there's a lot of Goosebumps references I'm going to make in this, just because not only is the town seem like it's a Canadian town, just like the TV show was filmed in, but also 2 of the main actors were in Goosebumps episodes.
Oh, so really?
It just makes me very happy. Yes. That's Catherine Isabel.
Oh, nice.
Catherine Isabel was in It Came From Beneath the Sink. Yes, she was in It Came From Beneath the Sink. She was the lead. And Chris Lemsch, I think is how it's pronounced his name. He was Styx in The Scarecrow Walks at Midnight. And what's weird is he's terrible in that Goosebumps episode, but I think he's pretty good in this movie.
Which one's he?
Who does he play?
He's Sam.
stand.
Oh, yeah, he was good. He was good. I liked him. Yeah,
he's trying to put on, like, a southern accent in Scarecrow Walks at Midnight, and it's not for him. He's like, you damn seed kids, you know, you're getting out of here. And it's just like, stop, man.
Usually a mistake. Accents are usually a mistake.
Usually.
So I was watching Goosebumps recently with Caitlin. I'm like, that guy looks just like Anakin Skywalker. And I looked it up, and it was Hayden Christensen. Yeah.
If I ever meet him, that's the first thing I'm going to say. I'm like, I love you in Night of the Living Dummy 3. And he's going to be like,
what?
He's either going to be like, oh my God, you're the best. Or he's going to be like, I hate you. Please never mention that to my face again.
And embarrassing admission, but I did find that scary. I got a thing about dolls. Freaks me out.
Oh, yeah.
The part where he turns Hayden Christian into a dummy is pretty freaky, I thought.
Yeah, I thought that was freaky.
I didn't see it.
And then he's like a pretty unmotivated villain, at least. But like for a while, like, what are you going to do to these kids? Just turned one of them into a dummy. He's tormenting the other ones. It's like, you just don't know what he's capable of. And then you remember it's PG. But like, I was like, Caitlin was laughing at me because I was like, I don't like this. I don't like this.
Is also PG.
Yeah, Poltergeist still scares me.
Yeah. I think Poltergeist was the reason they made PG-13 because like legally they couldn't make it R-rated. So, but they were like, this doesn't cover this movie. Let's make something new.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, because that movie, we've done a lot of horror movie watching in pandemic, like through the last like whatever 18 months, and that was one of them. And I was like, oh wow, like I thought I was just a coward when I watched it as a teenager, but it turns out I'm still a coward.
All right. So let's dig in. Ginger Snaps. We start off with there's something killing dogs in the town, which is the dog deaths are always way worse than human deaths in movies. And this movie has like five of them. It's really distressing.
Yeah. I think that goes to show its quality with how much I liked it, because when it opened with a dog death, I'm like, oh, wow. Doesn't strike one well. Doesn't bode well. Yeah. I have like good chance I'm going to hate this because I don't like it. But speaking of the dog death, in the beginning when the mother comes out and then sees the dog and then she starts screaming and freaking out, I think that's 100% like accurate, appropriate reaction to finding a dead dog. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, because I think I'm like yes, if like that, like I don't think she was being overboard at all. I think that's exactly if anyone reacted less than that, sociopath.
Yeah, which is weird too, because like no kid in town seems to care about any of the dog deaths. Because we start off with that one kid in the sandbox playing with the paw of the dog
parts.
And then when the mom's like, "It got our dog," the kids just like look up from their hockey match and then go back into it.
Yeah, and then one of them's playing with his dog, and you're like, "Oh God, that's foreshadowing." You know that dog's gonna eat it later.
Yep. And from there, we are introduced. It's such a weird thing because they like almost set it up to make you think that like Bridget, when she walks out, played by Emily Perkins, who also was Beverly in the 1990s It.
Yes.
It's the weirdest thing. She's like 22 years old. She's playing 15. She's the oldest of the three main actors, and she's playing the youngest. It's kind of
so young.
And she does a good job. They do, because she does look young. I wouldn't have guessed that she was older than Catherine Isabel, especially by like however many, like two, she's like 3 years older than her.
Yeah. And she's also wearing an absolutely terrible wig in this movie, too.
Yeah, she was very spooky looking, like a weird.
Because like apparently her previous movie, she had to like shave her head or like buzz it down, and they needed a long haired girl, so they just put up this weird like frumpy wig on her.
It's frumpy, that's for
sure. Yeah, it is.
But it's weird because they almost set it up to make you think that Bridget and Ginger are the ones killing the dogs, because like the second after, oh, they got the dog, Bridget walks out with like a can of gasoline and rope and stuff. You're like, oh snap! But no, they're just doing the coolest art project of all time.
I was like, what the fuck?
That was also a cool reveal, because Julia was like, did they kill that dog? And then I think I don't want to speak for her, but I was like, I imagine it was they like, strike have. Two. If they killed that dog, how are we supposed to ever root for them? And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure that like I knew the background that was that it was a werewolf. So I was pretty sure it wasn't them. But
I didn't know that.
I know. They set it up pretty well.
It's fun. It's fun not to know anything.
Mm-hmm. And we're introduced to Ginger, as again stated, portrayed by Catherine Isabel, and Bridget, portrayed by Emily Perkins. And we get their first instance of their sisterly relationship. Bridget's first line to Ginger is Baxter's fertilizer, and Ginger's like, I'm cutting Marissa's so girly, I'm gonna slit my my throat. And you're like, it's they're so interesting characters. They're such interesting characters. I feel like,
yeah, I hated that. I closed my eyes.
I also, because it's like, it's same with the dog killing in the first scene. It's a bold narrative move too, because the rules of the movie haven't been established. Mm-hmm. You have like a girl who's like got like a knife on a wrist and then and you're not like sure how much they're going to show or what, like you just don't know like what the confines of the movie are going to allow yet. So you're like, that adds a different level of like stress and tension because you're like, oh shit, you could like see something gross.
Right. Especially because they have that conversation about like their suicide, like death pact. And then right from there, you go to their suicide photo montage, which is just the coolest thing. Like she's impaled on the white picket fence.
That was really cool.
I couldn't believe how many there were.
There were a lot.
Like, and again, when we were watching it, I was like, they could never make this movie now.
No.
Yeah.
Like too much, glorifying suicide or all, like it just wouldn't fly these days. It's kind of crazy. It was 2001?
Yeah, it was like 2000. Was it 2000 or 2001?
2000, I think. They had a problem making it back then too, because like the Columbine Massacre was very fresh.
Yeah.
And in Canada, some films are publicly funded. So in the wake of Columbine, they were like, our taxpayer dollars are going to this movie about death-obsessed teens. This is not... This can't stand. And everyone's like, so like no casting directors would work with the film. And then
like, oh, Columbine was just a fluke.
Yeah, it's not.
Nope. Yeah. Yeah, that turned out to be totally true.
Well, it's the thing, like if you just watch the opening scene, like you said, what the rules haven't been established in the wake of Columbine, you could imagine that that's where this movie is going. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Definitely. Oh yeah, definitely.
They're spooky little weird bitches.
I also love there's one scene where one of them commits suicide, has the fake suicide picture, and they have a suicide note that just says no comment.
No comment.
So just like, that's fun.
That is funny. I don't think I noticed that one.
Yeah, I thought this movie was funny.
Yeah.
It was like dark. It was dark comedy, but really enjoyable, mm-hmm. I thought.
They have a lawnmower death with a bunch of like fake entrails, which is always
fun. It was very creative. It was disgusting. I mean, I don't know where they got all those supplies as teens, but.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Supportive mother, I guess.
Yes, and their mother.
The mother's an absolute dream in this movie.
I love that mother.
When the scene came when they were having dinner with their parents, Julia's like, they have parents? I assume they were feral children. And then the mom is like so like chipper, and the dad is just so like, I don't know, like a typical like 90s dad from a lot of like pop culture. And it was just, yeah, that was really funny to see the interplay of these two extremely macabre teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they're like fairly normal parents.
Yeah, it's like they had this super chipper, like super nice mom and the dad who was just like your typical like 90s, female stuff. I don't want to hear that. I'm eating dinner.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to pay attention to my meatloaf. Like, yeah. And then the mom like making a sarcastic remark about how he's not very useful. Actually, what's coming to mind is in Stranger Things, the dad, Mike, and Nancy's dad, like just like pretty much like almost a non-entity.
Mm-hmm. I also loved too, like when they have that in their classroom scene right after the montage with that awesome like string quartet music, whatever. The guidance counselor, after seeing the pictures, is like, I was outraged by that, wasn't I? Yeah. So it's like everyone is just so like cartoonishly like, why I never even seen such a thing in this movie.
Well, when they got sent to the guidance counselor, Julia was like, okay, that's realistic.
Yeah, that's something. Nowadays, like you said about making this movie today, nowadays they would probably just be like thrown to like jail or something. They'd be like, you guys have problems.
Oh, yeah. Thinking about killing yourself.
It's like, I hope you like prison.
And then we have that field. There's a lot of field hockey in this movie, which always throws me off whenever I watch it.
It's a Canada thing.
But like, no one notices the latest dog until Bridget's knocked into it. I was like, man, no one's paying attention in this movie.
Yeah, the dog deaths don't seem to really disturb them, which is wild. And that too, I thought it was funny because they're all running around playing field hockey wearing like extremely dowdy uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like the teenage boys are watching and like, it's like they're like dressed like nuns. It's like hilarious that they're like trying to like see anything shifting under those like that like massive uniform.
I had the same thought. I was like, because the guys, it's funny that the guys are all pervs in this movie, but then there's no pretense to it. There's no slickness to it. Like you said, they're wearing like sweatpants and sweaters, and they're like, yeah, girl, shake it. Let me see them jiggling. I'm like, you can't see anything jiggling except sweatpants.
You try as you may, like, you can't see any. And then I also, the teenage boys looked like teenage boys.
I thought they were realistic, yeah, because they looked so like young. Their age, which mm-hmm. is like nice. And then the girls looked young too, but girls always look a little more mature, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Usually the guys in high school movies look like they're in their 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so these guys, even like the cool ones, looked like little dorks.
Yeah. It was funny too, because like I remember speaking of how young everyone looked, for one of the questions Nicole sent us, Megan, one of them is like, what's the sexiest monster? And I was Googling to make sure I wasn't missing any of them. And a lot of lists had Ginger on them. And I'm like, she's 16. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh no, the actress was 18. But still.
It's still creepy.
Still. Still.
If you're talking about when she's like a dog.
No. When she does like her jawbreaker, you know, walk down the hall and with the slow motion.
Oh, yeah. That's creepy. Yeah, that's creepy.
That's kind of weird because she's 16.
She's hot, but yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, if you talk about her like from American Mary or something, then yeah, she's
Hannibal. That's Hannibal, where I know her from. Yep.
She's in she's great in Hannibal.
I like her.
I did notice there was something on IMDb. Apparently, Emily and Catherine also played sisters in the movie Another Cinderella Story, which is like a really weird comic.
I've seen it. Yes, I've seen it. Oh, Selena Gomez is in it. Yep.
Were they the ugly stepsisters?
They were the ugly stepsisters. Yep. They were the ugly stepsisters. Jane Lynch was their mother, and Selena Gomez was their stepsister.
That's hilarious.
God, that's so funny. It's weird.
Selena Gomez. Is that her? Selena Gomez?
Yeah,
what's her name?
Selena Gomez.
We're watching that show on Hulu now with her.
And Steve Martin and Martin Short, like yep. The only murders in the building. It's really cute. Yeah, if you're cute.
But sidetrack. But all these people are still relevant to us.
Yeah, just so you know, like this, the last thing I saw Selena Gomez is wasn't Another Cinderella Story. It was what we watched last night.
It's weird too, because like I saw a fact on IMDb where apparently Catherine Isabel and Emily Perkins, they were born in the same hospital, in the same wing. They went to the same elementary, middle, and high school, and have the same casting director. And they've played sisters twice. It's like, that's weird.
Crazy.
Were they born not the same year?
Not the same year.
Yeah, Emily's like 3 or 4 years older. And they also auditioned for this movie on the same day. Like, it's just the weirdest, like, they can't get away from each other.
It seems like they must be, friendly, right?
I know. I'm upset. I'm hoping they're best friends.
I saw an interview with them recently because apparently there's a Ginger Snaps TV show that's going to be coming out at some point.
Interesting.
It's like a remake TV show. And so they brought the two of them on after the announcement for like Today Show or something. And they were like, we haven't seen each other since like 2007, but they were still like, you know, super like lovey-dovey with each other. They seem like be on good terms and definitely they like each other, but you know, they just don't
not BFFs.
Hang out.
Yeah.
They're not BFFs. They're,
Both on Supernatural, but on different episodes and like Emily Perkins was like a recurring character.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the thing,
two episodes.
Speaking of Canadian actors who are in other things, this is where we're first introduced to Sam, the drug dealing botanist, greenhouse employee.
He has interests other than drugs.
He does
weed.
He definitely, but he seems into plants.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird too because like everyone else is an extreme in this movie. Like Ginger and Bridget are extreme goth before goth was a thing. Everyone else is like extreme cheery, and he's very subdued. I think he's really good in this movie.
I agree. I thought he was really good. I was really rooting for him to make it out. Like that was, I cared. Which again, not that like when you're watching a horror movie, my level of care at least plummets. Like in terms of do I care if they live or die? And it's like I wanted him to live.
Probably the most.
Yeah. Him and Bridget, I wanted to live. But Bridget mostly from like, because she's the main character. And I think you're seeing
it. I was fine with those two bitches dying.
Yeah. Well, I think
if they wanted to go.
If they died, I would have been fine with it. I wanted Sam and the mom to live probably the most.
The mom lives.
Yeah, I was happy about that.
She was great.
She's so good.
She was hilarious.
Like, she was like really funny. Like when I was thinking about it, it must be really hard to do that well when you have like horror and like, and you're incorporating comedy and like, and so there was a lot of dark comedy, but the mom was just straight comedy and it wasn't like mood whiplash. And she like came across like really likable and I thought it was really well done. And I don't know. They just pulled it off really well. I felt like that was the tone of the movie. I thought they did a really good job with overall.
Yeah. Cause she has that scene very shortly after this where like Ginger keeps like rubbing her back and she's like, do you think it could be cramps, Ginger?
Yeah.
And everyone's like,
bro. You guys are late for your periods. Yeah, it's like, mom. And like, also like so much of the.
It's so weird they don't have their periods.
It is. So much of like the period talk and like the mom stuff. Like it just, it also was like rang kind of true to life. Just like, I felt like that was a really good and weird and macabre like portrait of adolescence in a lot of ways, like as an exaggeration. But mm-hmm. like there are certain things like the physical changes and everything was all like exact. But you're like, oh God, like this kind of takes me back.
Yeah, one of the reasons why, like, both of us, this movie passes by for a while, and then we finally sat down and watched it, because I had heard this concept before, and I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, werewolfism as a analogy for puberty, that's genius.
It is genius.
It's not hitting, it's not, like, browbeating it, it's just, like, subtle, and
yeah,
very well done, yeah.
Especially because then you have all those scenes like with the nurse where they're like, this is not normal. Or with the mom even, she's like, this is not normal. And everyone's like, oh, it's totally normal. Everyone has it.
And she's like, oh, I'm bleeding. So, oh, no, it seems like a lot, but it's so it's fine. Yeah. And also, yeah, it's like, just bring, yeah, it really does like bring you back in like weird and like funny ways. Like, oh, like, again, like, I think it speaks well to the tone of it too, because it captures something that I feel like is probably like pretty universal for a lot of women. And I thought that was like very cleverly done.
For sure. I don't know from firsthand experience, but you know, it seemed accurate enough. Yeah. I don't know.
I thought it was interesting that the hot sister had such rocking cans, but no period.
Yeah, she had rocking cans, but no period. That was a little unrealistic, I'll tell you. I think the rocking cans usually come after the period, but.
Well, it's similar in sort of ways to, like, Carrie, the movie.
Yes.
And apparently Catherine Isabel also was in a TV remake of Carrie. I don't know if she was Carrie or not.
Embarrassingly enough, I saw that as well. Okay. She wasn't Carrie, no. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, Carrie, that's so true, yeah.
I think it's just one of those, like, logistical things where you're like, well, I don't want to write a movie about a 12-year-old girl, so I'm just going to fudge it and make it a 16-year-old girl, because that's just inherently a better story. I can cast an actual actress as opposed to, like, a random kid.
Yeah,
it just usually happens with, like gymnast types, like people who don't have, like, body fat and who are really...
From what I've heard... Yeah. From what I've heard, it was a much more common thing in the 70s because of like leaded gas and stuff that was in the air. But
oh, interesting.
That was something that wasn't like as rare as it is today, just because, I don't know, everyone was huffing poison every day.
Hormones and our eggs.
We're pumped full of hormones. That's true. Like,
you have 9-year-olds menstruating this day and age.
Yeah, no, yeah. I was like getting like jet black hair all over my legs when I was in second grade. I was like begging to shave my legs. Mom's like, that's not so bad. And she looks, she's like, oh.
You should shave your legs.
So you should shave your legs.
God damn it.
I couldn't pass for like a teenager even when I was a teenager.
It looks younger now than she did in high school.
I think I do look younger now than I did. I was like repeatedly mistaken for a substitute teacher by my own peers.
Wow.
Sweet substitute.
Sweet. Yeah. I was like, I'm here to dispute a grade. Excuse me.
I remember at the end of 7th grade, I was 5 feet tall, and I walked
in. It's impossible to imagine you 5 feet tall, by the way.
And I walked into 8th grade, 5'8".
Oh my God.
Like, over that one summer? No, actually, I didn't feel any pain at all. I was just kind of went, whoop. And I walked in, and the first day, everyone goes, what the hell happened to you? And I was like, I don't know. I'm tall now.
Yeah, that's wild.
And then I just became the tall person from now on. And that's, I love being there.
It's a great place to be.
Yeah, good thing to have. Yeah.
Our cousin Raymond's 6'5". And there was a time, I was like, and women, girls tend to develop quicker. So I was like tall.
You had the black hair on your legs.
I had the black hair on my legs when I was 8 years old. Yeah. So that didn't help. And got my period not long after, PMI. And my cousin, I was the tallest of like us. And then one summer, like, he went away for, like, 2 weeks, and he came back, and he shot up, like, yeah, like very tall, like, towered over me, and I couldn't believe it. And it's, like, now he's, like, 8 inches taller than me.
Yeah, it's literally, like, over the course of a summer, I went from, like, the shortest person in my family to the tallest person in my family, just, like...
Did you lord it?
Oh, I loved it. It's the best.
Good.
Because my dad is, like, the shortest out of his group of brothers. Like, they're all 6'4", 6'5", and he's 5'10".
Still, like, decently tall, but...
Yeah, he's still decently tall.
But everyone else is 6 foot plus. You probably have a chip on your shoulder, I would imagine.
But I somehow got all of the tall genes. My uncle was, like, 6'7", so I just got...
You got his...
Oh, I got lucky. Let's get to the werewolfness of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
because they, after field hockey fighting, Ginger and Bridget had the idea to pretend to make their bully think that their dog was killed by the Beast of Bailey Downs.
Yeah.
But there was a fun moment there where Bridget's like, I can't distract her. And Ginger's like, if you don't want to take part of your own ideas, stop having good ideas.
That was funny. She's such a bitch, though.
Ginger. She's so Ginger's fun.
A huge bitch. Yeah. I felt like
the other girl's a little fucking weirdo. Like, I did wind up kind of liking them both. But
no, me too.
Like, these girls suck.
It's one of those things, like, Ginger's fun. I really like her as a character. But you're right. In real life, I would not want to be friends with her. I would not want to be around Ginger. But as a movie character, I was like, oh, Ginger's great. She's so cool.
Yeah, and she's pretty. She's pretty funny.
And she's funny, and she's like psychotically attached to her sister. But then also, like, she's really pissed off at her sister. So it's like, oh my god, you're not letting anyone else talk to your sister, but you're also not talking to your sister. I feel like this isn't fair.
Bridget, she's like, I really like her character journey throughout this movie because it's very subtle, mm-hmm. where she like comes into her own as like a weird, almost coming of age for her, even though she doesn't come of age. Yet, where she's like suddenly more confident and more independent by the end of the film. I thought that was really good, but let's get there first.
We'll get there. I agree, and I look forward to commenting on that later.
The werewolf is really freaky looking
and gross,
and I did not see it coming because I had no idea about the movie. So I'm like, what the fuck, is she dead? Like, why would they kill the hot one? But
Juliana was like, I did not see that coming when she gets like pulled away in the woods.
And then I was like, how could she be alive? There's so much biting. And so it made sense. I was happy that it made some logical sense in confines of the movie.
And I also liked that Bridget went after the thing and was like beating it with the camera, and that was also a good way to get a picture. The whole I thought the scene was really well composed because it was like her and her sister are really close, so I'm glad that she went after her instead of running away, which I think it was organic to find a picture. And same with when they're running away, and then Sam's truck runs into the werewolf and it like kind of explodes in like disgusting werewolf like
that was good. And I thought that was very natural.
I agree.
To get him involved and like,
I wasn't really expecting it either. So I thought that was a natural, interesting way to involve him and to have the central sphere expand to three instead of two. And then it would later expand with the mom as well. Yeah. But
I did read as a background fact, originally the director wanted a completely furless or hairless werewolf. And the effects guy was like, you gotta give me a place to put zippers, man. You gotta give me some tufts of fur so I can put some zippers. It looked.
And also, if you're going with the puberty thing, it was funny how she's like, oh, she's just shaving everything. And like,
yes, that was funny.
That was funny. Like,
there were some scenes I'm just like, Ginger, get a new razor. Get 80 new razors. What are you doing, girl?
Just let it be, sister. This is who you are now.
And when she's shaving and her mom busts in, that was also like very much harkens to when you're like a teenager and your mom's
and I love
like,
when she had a tail. Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes, but no, that was really funny. I feel like that like there's so much of this movie that the two main characters could have been annoying, and part of their personality was annoying, which would make sense for teenage girls, especially weirdo loners who are not socialized like them. And so I thought that was really well done. And like so many things that could have been annoying were handled so well. And I also felt like this was a movie that didn't try too hard, which a lot of times I watch movies, especially horror movies, and I feel like they're trying too hard. Like this is trying to be X or this is trying to be Y. Yes.
Well, that brings us to the point of how Jennifer's body is just a total ripoff of this movie. That cries way too hard.
Well, after watching this, I do agree with you.
It was just, they got hotter girls who aren't related and are less weird and more like superficial.
Having Amanda Seyfried be like the nerd is like insane. Speaking of rocking cans, like, there's no universe where Amanda Seyfried isn't like one of the most popular people in school.
Oh well, that's always movie stuff where it's like, oh look at the nerd, and it's just like after a montage she's like, oh wow, that's one of the top.
She has a ponytail and it's glasses.
Like, wow, a makeover, and now she's suddenly one of the top 50 hottest women on the planet. That makes sense.
Yeah, like classic Rachel Lee Cook, who was like a model, and then it's like, oh. Oh, but now, look, she's wearing overalls. Glasses. Sometimes she has paint smudged on her face.
Did you see her glasses?
Did you see the glasses?
So now she's completely just horrific looking. Oh my god.
Horrific looking. Yeah. Terrifying. No one would dare touch her.
I do really like Jennifer's Body. I think it's a fun movie. And I
liked it too. I liked it too. But I just like we saw it recently. Mm-hmm. And I liked it, but it was like nowhere near as good as this movie, I didn't think.
I agree. I prefer Ginger Snaps.
And it was fun at points. I liked it. I didn't dislike it. But then after I saw this, I'm like, that is just a total ripoff.
I feel like if anything, Jennifer's body did make me think that Megan Fox is a better actress than I ever thought. Because I thought
she's still not that good.
But she was, I thought, the best part of that movie. And she did a good job, I thought. She did a very good job. It's a fun
role. It's fun, for sure. I just recently watched a film with her that's like a thriller sort of horror, not really. It's called Till Death. It's coming to Netflix in a couple weeks, where she spends the whole movie handcuffed to her dead husband. And it's pretty good. I thought she did a really good job. So check that out.
Reminds me of Gerald's Game.
It sounds like a little like Gerald's Game, I'm willing to engage for the 90 minutes or however long.
It's similar in parts to Gerald's Game, but where Gerald's Game is like literally the entire movie is at that bed. She gets around. She's crafty with it, which I always appreciate in a protagonist.
Crafty.
Yeah, she's trying her best to get out of the situation by any means necessary.
You know, I don't dislike her either, but I just was like, I couldn't believe like what a pretty blatant ripoff it was. And it was only a few years later, but they just made it more Hollywood. This movie had a lot more like grit to it, I liked.
And the two girls, neither of them were cool or popular. They were both like depressed. Bizarre, goths, and sisters. And they had like that weird, they had a weird like homoerotic sort of thing going on, especially as it developed.
And like you said, they're all covered up in like sweatpants and stuff, and like Catherine Isabel is hot, but like she's not like, you know, Megan Fox. I mean especially in those specific movies, like if I walked through the halls of my high school and saw Catherine Isabel, I wouldn't be like, where'd she come from? I'd just be like, wow, that's a hot girl at my high school. Whereas if I saw Megan Fox walking down the hall, I'd be like, what the fucking what?
Yeah, unbelievably good looking and tinkered with surgically pretty blatantly.
An alien, like an alien from the hottest planet on Earth. Yeah. Like a planet in the galaxy. You'd just be like really confused about where she came from. That is
funny. Like Amanda Seyfried is like still too hot to see in the wild.
Yeah.
But like Catherine Isabel is like super hot. But she's like someone that you could like see in real life and be like, oh wow, that's like an incredibly good looking woman. Mm-hmm. Whereas that was one of the many things I liked about this movie too, is it was her hot montage was like pretty like underplayed compared to other hot montages. It was just like, oh look, she's wearing something with like cleavage and like obviously like they've got like some sort of like soundtrack going and it slowed down a little bit.
Yeah.
And she's just very good looking, but it wasn't like ridiculous.
So the next day after the werewolf scene, after we see Sam run over the werewolf and kill it, which lets us know that it's not it's not a silver bullet. It's not a Hollywood situation, which again, I do like the fact that they're trying to make it like kind of realistic. Werewolves, you could almost buy this could happen the way they lay it out, as opposed to like normal werewolf situations, I feel like.
Yes.
How it's a gradual month-long process and it's a bacterial infection. And if they use silver bullets, it'll just kind of be like nonsensical. And it leads to that next day where we start off with like Ginger and Bridget looking at the wall of tampons at the drugstore. And it's shot like this giant mountain that they're looking up like, oh my God, how are we going to scale that? Which is just fun. And we see Sam again. And he's just like, it's weird because even though he supplies all of the high school kids with weed, he's still like, hey, get the hell out of my truck. Because you can't smoke it here, you assholes.
I thought it was a pretty organic way of bringing him back in, too. And then I'll obviously show, like, the personality change a little bit. Because the horny little teenager guy, Jason, is like, you want to smoke weed to get rid of your cramps? And then Ginger's like, yeah, sure. That was a pretty good exchange. Like, I feel like that was something that I have to say about the plot, too. Is they did a good job of, like, moving it along in a way that it didn't seem like based on, like, the rules were given, far-fetched or, like, or obvious from that. I wasn't really sure how it was going to end. I had, like, two or three possible solutions that I thought would happen, and, like, one of them did. But it's, like, it wasn't like, oh, this is so obvious. Like, it's going to, like, X is going to happen.
There's a couple character moments that come out of that really are surprising. One of the ones I would not have predicted was Jason understanding and knowing about periods. Yes. Because he has that moment where he's like, hey, I have three sisters at home. I know the deal. Let's smoke some weed. It'll help you out. It helps them.
And that made it seem like more of a person.
Everybody was likable. Like,
even the dicks.
Even the dick. Well, that bully girl, she was a bitch, but she even had some nice moments. Like, she I did. That was, like, so like, there was nobody that was like purely just an asshole.
Yeah.
which I like. It's Canadians, so they're
and
like, you know,
and like they're nice. And the bitch girl, it was like she heard one of her friends overheard the two sisters like talking like major shit on her about everything about her. So her pushing her into the dead dog, pushing Bridget into the dead dog, was mean. But like there, it was like she had a reason to do it,
right?
And then she gets jealous based on the Sam thing, which also like that happens a lot in horror movies. I feel like where you just have one like human villain for the sake of having one, and then when they die or whatever happens to them, that like that suggests that the story is being elevated to the next level. Like, oh, like now things are really serious. Like the tertiary villain is out, but that they did a good job of making her seem like an actual person, especially a teenager.
Yeah, no one's like a cardboard cutout character in this movie, I don't think. And I really liked the conversation Sam and Bridget have while Ginger's inside smoking weed. I really like too, where he's like, oh, well, officer, it looked like a lycanthrope to me, sir. You know, like he's just kind of playing this weird, almost he seems like he's in a more serious movie than everyone else, but it doesn't clash with everyone else.
Yeah, good point.
It's interesting.
And he's a drug dealer, so he's probably extra nervous about dealing with
authorities.
Yeah.
And he also has that great line in the next time he and Bridget talk where Bridget's like, I really think it is a werewolf. And he goes, well, that would explain the circumcised human dick it had. So.
That's a really good line. If you,
I liked him and Bridget's whole thing. I thought was very well done.
That was one of the, because obviously a lot other characters thought it was romantic and maybe it could have been of it, but it was like neither of them treated it like that, and that made me be more invested in.
And
like,
it would have been creepy because he's supposed to be 15 and he was what, like 22.
Yeah, it was. And that's what he said. And he even said like, "Oh, I don't see you like that." And it was, and she like legitimately seemed to have no interest based on. She was just very obviously interested in like curing her. So like that's the other thing that drives me crazy in movies sometimes when it's like, oh, like a guy's paying attention to me the first time. That's like going to be the most important thing, not like all of this like life or death shit that I've got on my plate. And in this they didn't do any of that. She was like 100% about her sister and about like trying to cure the werewolfism and everything, and trying to like mitigate the casualties like that, and that's like what a normal person would do.
I really appreciate that. There wasn't really romance in their relationship. It was a very business like, hey, we're both doing this because it's the right thing to do. We gotta do the thing.
Lycanthrope was a word.
So. Yeah, exactly. So they've got an unshakable bond there.
Oh yeah.
I also liked that, which was like frustrating, but in like I think a good way. Bridget keeps her sister's secrets the whole movie. Which I think a lot of movies don't do, and they just do it to kind of like amp up tension or like narrative tension or like character tension. But she didn't tell her mom, that was actually funny, she didn't tell her mom that Ginger had her period. Ginger just threw her like horrifically blood-soaked underwear in the laundry and her mom found them and then made her a cake. And then she just assumes her sister told her and she didn't. And then same with Sam. Bridget just pretends she's the one who got bit, and he figures it out pretty quick. He figures it out, but she never betrays her sister's confidence. Which I think was like a good character choice and like a bold narrative move, because you could have reached some shortcuts with her, like if she was trying to like suck up to Sam because she found him cute, or if she was pissed off at her sister for like running off with Jason and like tattled to her mom or something. But she never did that. And that is like, I think, what a realistic person would do. And it was nice to see that in a movie, because I think you don't see that too often.
I also like too that, again, like you were saying, how Sam figured it out, how he wasn't an idiot. He's like, you're the same person I've been known for the past month. Ginger's obviously going off the fucking rails. I'm not an idiot.
He probably saw a hint of that tail.
Ginger mentions the tail to try to get him off her sister's tail. Yeah.
God, I was gonna say something and I lost it. No,
if it comes back, just say it and you can insert it with movie magic.
It's true. Oh, I love how the mom just brings, like, she's like, Ginger's favorite dessert. Our little girl's a woman now. And the dad is just like, oh God, this needs to stop.
Yeah, I love the mom.
She's low-key the best character in the movie.
Yeah. The best character. And she's a lovely woman. And, like, she's funny and very lighthearted. And, like, it reminded me of when I was a teenager and I got my period. And I went to the next family event and my papa gave me a hug. And he's like, I hear you're finally a woman, congratulations. And I was like, mom. Why are you telling everybody?
It's all your business goes everywhere with the Pendergast and Ellis family.
God, it's so weird.
our older sister, when she got her period, she told my granny and my, and obviously we were really young.
She was
and
like
my,
13. So
and my granny, yeah, so yeah, 10, probably like, yeah, 10, 11 and 13. And my granny busted out champagne.
Yeah, champagne.
So we had champagne because Caitlin menstruated. And honestly, like it was pretty dope. Like
for kids. Taste for the bubbles.
Yeah, I got us a taste for the bubbly. I can tell you.
God, it's so funny because, like, as a guy, we don't have that, oh, now you're a man moment, I guess, unless you're, you know, have a bar mitzvah or something. Yeah. So can't relate to that story.
It's good to mark these things, but it's like a very awkward time of life.
Oh, I also like, as part of Ginger's transformation, one of the things she gets is she starts getting these like silver streaks of hair that become like blonde in. It reminds me of my Nightmare on Elm Street, how when one night Nancy wakes up and she has the silver streak, it just makes her look like a badass.
Yeah.
I like that too. I've always really liked the gothic tradition of people's hair going white. I think that's cool. And yeah. I like when people do it.
Sam and Bridget, one of their things they have is they like pierce. That's such a weird scene. The pierced silver. Yeah.
What was it? When Bridget was piercing Ginger's belly button.
Oh, yeah.
And then she's like a werewolf, so it's really hard for her to get through. I assume it's because she's a werewolf that's really hard for her to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously it's completely ineffectual.
Yeah.
I think it's weird too, just because like how it's shot. Maybe I'm reading too much into things, but how she's like gripping the bedpost and she's like, oh, this will hurt a little bit. Right. It was very weird, especially because they're sisters. It's just like, it's weird to like film it this way.
Yeah, they're trying to make it creepy.
And
yeah.
I love homoeroticism. I'm like a big fan in like fiction. Love it. See it in everything, even if it's not there. But like, but this is sisters. So even me. It's so creepy. I was like, oh gosh. At first I was like thinking, oh, I always see it. So I'm probably just seeing it and being like a dirty pervert. And then I'm like, oh no. Like, ooh, they're really going that route, which is bold, but gross. But like bold, but I still respect it.
So one thing that's weird about the werewolfism in this movie is not only is it transmittable on the full moon via a bite or blood transfusion, it's also apparently sexually transmitted.
Yeah. Because
we see that with Jason in that scene where they're in the back of the car and Ginger's being really aggro towards him. And he's like, hey, who's the guy here? And she's like, who's the guy? And she just like jumps on him and it gets kind of weird real quick.
I also thought that was like
I liked how vague it was.
Mm. Me too.
Because it was like, it was pretty vague on how it was transmitted. Like it was just kind of like, I don't know. There you go. Like, so it was like, she like seemed to punch him through the body.
And then the scene ended. And, yeah, exactly. You don't know exactly what, but you obviously she talks about being like a freak lay, so you assume sex happened. I thought that was a humanizing moment for him too when he was like, yeah, slow down. It's like it was like kind of nice because I feel like that's another thing. Also, when you're young and you watch, like that's kind of like for me at least, watching TV shows and movies, that was like my like first understanding, like quote unquote, into the opposite sex, like thinking like, oh, this is what men are like, and it's not, obviously it's like not really true.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was, he's obviously like a perv and he's kind of a jackass, but he's still like, oh wow, like let's slow down, like this is the first time we're having sex. And it was like, even though he's like, that was kind of nice to see for him, he wasn't just like all about slamming Ginger, especially since she was acting so erratic.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a really interesting moment where even technically this is exactly what he wanted, mm-hmm. but as the movie is set up, but now that's happening, he's like, whoa, wait a minute, this is not what I was expecting at all. But then he plays it off later when he's just like, Ginger Fitzgerald rocked my world.
He's like all beat up.
And then
he's
like that.
He's literally got like, yeah, he's got like cuts in his face.
Pants, but also, it reminded me of Jennifer's body.
Yes.
Well, all the guys that she was fucking, didn't care when they died, really. Maybe that one, you were like, eh.
The first one, like, I cared a little bit.
It was just like, they were just douchebags.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, bye-bye, don't care. Bye-bye. So it was like nice that they were humanizing the... Mm-hmm.
And then also, I thought it was interesting. I liked it because when she was talking to Bridget, well, obviously she just mauled the neighbor dog, but she's talking about how like everyone's going to think she's a freak and like she's a freak lay and he's going to tell everybody and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And like, she's building it up and he doesn't do that at all, and she spends the rest of the movie avoiding him.
Yeah.
And like, and he's like trying to seek her out at first, it seems like, because like he's into it, and then obviously because he's turning into a werewolf. I liked that because I felt like that was also really true to life when she was like catastrophizing this, and from his perspective, until he starts turning into something inhuman, he was like, yeah, like, oh, she rocked my world. It was all positives, all compliments. And I liked that because I liked that what she was saying wasn't necessarily the truth, like the reality.
And one thing, Julie, I think you mentioned this, where you weren't sure, like it looked like Ginger punched Jason like through his body. Right after that, Ginger comes home covered in blood. blood. And mm-hmm. then we're like, it's the fake out of, oh, he killed Norman, the little mini dog next door. And it was like sad that there's more dog death. But it was one of those things where they let you sit with that, like, oh, God, Ginger murdered someone.
Yeah.
And then you're like, no, she just killed the dog. And like, okay, it's still sad.
And it's funny. At least they humanized the guy. We're not like totally like, fuck that guy.
Because yeah. if he was more of a dick, I would, he was like a funny dick. Mm-hmm. But if he was more of a dick, I would find the reveal that she actually killed the dog to be worse.
Yeah.
like than if yeah. she killed him.
But the thing I was confused about, which is like, fine, I get confused all the time. like she got so torn up and like should have been dead mm-hmm. that like she wasn't, and she just healed all of her shit, that I was like, oh, she probably just did that to him. Mm-hmm. He like tore him up pretty good and then he just healed. That's kind of what I was, but I liked how they didn't really give you any like mm-hmm. here's what's happening, which I like that when they don't treat you like an idiot, even though sometimes I am an idiot.
You know, I can't relate as much to the Ginger and Bridget stuff, but when Jason in the next scene, they're like, ah, look at, he's like, his pen cap exploded. I was like, oh God, this man's in dire need of something, man. He's in trouble.
That was horrifying.
But it also made me think, because I know that that obviously Ginger got her period before she got bit. Then after she gets bit and she's bleeding all over the bathroom floor, and then he starts bleeding, like, it makes, obviously makes you think, like, oh, like, whatever's happening is making you bleed. And I thought that was, like, it was gross and weird. But it did make you think, like, what's happening to Ginger is, like, it happens if you're a man or a woman, like, you're gonna have some genital bleeding, which is like disturbing.
And it's another realistic reaction, like in the next scene he's at the urinal, and when his piss stream turns to blood halfway through, he just starts screaming. He's like, oh my God. I'm like, I would,
100% what I would do.
Yeah, I'd be screaming too. That's not blood how things work.
Screaming about, like, yeah, like hitting the walls, like just reacting in a really dramatic manner.
This is a weird dumb thing, but it's also, he also doesn't stop peeing, which is also realistic. It's like, you can't stop once you go. Because, like, my last episode, guys, I was talking with Carrie about Midsummer, and there's that scene that bugs me where he pees on the sacred tree, and the guy comes up yelling at him, and the guy just stops peeing and just talks to the guy. He's like, what are you talking about? I didn't know it was a bad thing. I'm like, bro, you still got pee you need to pee. You can't just stop midstream. I think we left off around the pen exploding, but we didn't talk about the goon fight at the hockey game, where, like, the heavy metal music kicks in for, like, 30 seconds for Ginger to beat the crap out of her.
Honestly, I forgot about that. I'm glad you brought it up.
It's so funny.
Yeah, I forgot about that, too.
That was really funny.
That was a good beatdown.
That was a great beatdown. And then she's like, ah! That was really funny.
It's another reason why I like Sam's discovery of, he knew it was Ginger the whole time, is, like, over the course of this month, you can clearly see Ginger's, like, getting fangs and getting claws, and no one says a word about it.
Yeah, and she's, like, extremely erratic and crazy. Yeah.
Well, even the title, like, I did not, until we watched it, I was just thinking, obviously, about the delicious cookie, because that's where my brain goes. But, like, Ginger snaps, like, Ginger just snapping, which is, like, what happens the whole movie, too.
And it's weird, too, because, like, the title is about Ginger, but the movie's about Bridget more.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
There was a thing I thought was interesting. The writer of this movie does not like horror movies, because she thinks that they negatively represent women most of the time. Mm-hmm, and the director was like, okay, well, write one that's good with women.
That's funny, because you could tell it's, like, very well done with it female characters.
Passes the Bechdel. Is it Bechdel or Bechdel?
Yep.
Bechdel. It passes the Bechdel test with flying colors, which is just the idea of, like, two women in a movie talking to each other about something other than a man.
Yeah.
And it's, like, a shocking number of movies don't pass that, including a lot of early Marvel movies. It's, like, where all they either don't talk at all, or when they talk, it's about men. And it's, like, or the other test is the sexy lamp test. It's like, oh, if you replaced these female characters with sexy lamps, would the plot change? And I like that one, too, but that one's a little more extreme.
Yeah. The Bechdel's interesting because, like you said, it's an incredibly low bar, and a lot of movies fail it. Like, Star Wars, almost all the Star Wars movies fail it.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Lord of the Rings movies fail it. There was an experiment done by a website called the Horror Honeys. There it is. Where they all took a bunch of movies and they'd see if they passed the Bechdel test. And it was like a surprising amount of horror movies, surprising percentage amount of horror movies passed the Bechdel test as opposed to like percentage of normal movies.
The final girl is, you know, is a thing.
You always have the final girl. And if she has one female best friend who talks about anything other than a dude, then it passes. So and you get a lot of that.
Hairspray or like makeup or nail polish.
Well, I thought... It's funny, I've seen this movie like a billion times, but we watched it recently again for like the, for me, like probably like the 48th time, but like Scream with Tatum and Sydney. Mm-hmm. Just recently, I like kind of appreciated that they just have a really nice relationship.
Yeah, they have a really fun friendship.
They have a fun friendship. They talk very little about their boyfriends. It's like talking about like much more big picture stuff. And like there's no betrayal on either side. It's just like it's just like very supportive and loving and caring. And like it's just a nice friendship. And you realize how kind of rarely you see that, especially in the 90s with certain movies.
So we have an interesting thing where they determine the cure for werewolfism, or they think the cure for werewolfism, lycanthropy, I can say that without twisting my tongue, is monkshood, which apparently is an actual thing, which is like a cousin of Wolfsbane. I do like that even though the silver bullets are out, we come up with a realistic reason why not all the folklore, you can throw it out. I do like that. I think it's like, oh, it's a, what's it? It was a plant for radical detox. So in theory, you could detox all of the werewolf virus from your body at once with this plant. And I was like, I think that was really interesting.
Yeah, I like that too. And it was like pretty like, you know, it was easy. They did it. It worked. Like all that. It was just kind of like whatever, but I was fine with it. Let's keep it moving. I'm glad it worked. Let's keep it moving.
It was very convenient because it was like, oh, it's only around in the spring. Oh, well, I went to a craft store. My mom went to the craft store and she just so happened to buy monkshood because it was pretty or whatever.
All that I was fine with. I'm like, this is a little bit too easy, but I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
When they started, when the bully girl comes over.
Yes.
Some of, a little bit of that I found, that was like the only part that I felt was like tiny bit forced. The whole movie, I felt like I was fine with the way things went. I was mostly fine with that too. But I did feel like that was kind of, that situation was like kind of to like bring things to a head. Yeah. But I thought it was, especially how she died, I felt I, but that's fine. That's why my only, which is not even really a major gripe, but I just kind of was slightly underwhelmed by the way that that played out and that she like slips on the milk and like then busts her head and then she's dead. But it was a great opportunity
to bring the mom in.
To bring the mom in and then also for them to stage one of their, their like suicide, because that was clever. I thought like the whole way it was done was clever. Like the follow up was clever. So like, I have minor gripe, but it's mostly just like that's like probably the only thing I can bring up in the movie that I like when I was watching it. I was like a little like, okay, this feels a little like forced to bring about this event.
Yeah, I was gonna say that too. I was literally like, I think it is weird to have that Ginger goes from 0 to 100 moments where she's like threatening to kill the bully and then she slips on the milk. But it's all worth it for me because by the time the parents come in, Ginger's like taking her place in there and be like, it's another death photo. It's corn syrup. Want to try it, Dad? It was like so good.
Yeah.
No, the payoff was really good.
Mm-hmm. And then her being like, that's how the mom got involved.
Yes.
So it was like, it all worked out.
I think I just would have liked it better if Ginger killed her.
Yeah.
Based on the way the whole thing played out, it felt like a little bit of a cop out to have it be slipping on milk, then hitting her head and dying, just all of that. Even if it was like she slipped on the milk, hit her head, and was like having a seizure, and then like Ginger kills her, or did something to stop it. Like that would, but just like having it be kind of out of both of their hands, just felt like very convenient and a good way to like forestall like Ginger's final descent into like homicide.
Yeah. It does lead to another fantastic moment with the mom though, where she's about to see her in the freezer.
Yeah.
Yes. She just goes, "Mom, what do guys want?"
What do guys want? Yeah, I love that. Oh, honey.
That was great.
Yeah.
Everything with the mom was gold.
And it was just like such a weird, like I was like, when the mom first was introduced, I was like, are they in a foster care program? Like, it was like, what the? Like, the mom was just like, oh, these girls, they'll grow out of it. Like, she's just like so upbeat and doesn't like.
And they're also like living in like a weird basement situation.
It looks like hell in there. It looks like the house is nice.
But then I'm imagining it's their choice.
Yeah.
I go, imagining they've got perfectly pink frilled rooms upstairs that they're choosing to live in the unfinished basement.
There's also that scene though, because I remember where the mom's concerned about Ginger, and Bridget's like, "No, she likes the fact that you let us do our own thing." And she, and the mom's like, "I was hoping that approach was working."
Yeah, you know.
Her mom is so adorable.
She's so good.
I was so relieved that she lived.
Me too. I just didn't want her to. I was also relieved that she ended up being like so gung ho on their side. Which,
my God,
which seems like a mom.
Probably. I mean, we'll get there, but it's probably one of my favorite lines in the entire movie when she's like, "I'll just fill the house up with gas. We'll light it, and then we'll go away, just as girls." I was like, "What a dream of a character you are."
Yep. And then you're like, "Well, maybe the apple doesn't fall so far from the tree." Yeah.
And she's like, "What about Dad?" He goes, "Oh, he'll just blame me."
And then she's like, "It's not." I thought that was sweet too. And she's like, "It's not your fault." And yeah, she like starts crying. And I feel like that this movie like hit a lot of emotional levels in a way that felt right and didn't feel like, I didn't feel like they were like playing on your heartstrings. I just felt like it all unfolded in a way that I really liked. And that I was like, I was along for the whole ride.
Yeah. It felt like a natural interaction between like human characters as opposed to just like Hollywood turn on the waterworks kind of scenes.
Exactly. I bought the whole weird relationship with Ginger and Bridget, like their whole like codependent thing. But, and then also like the moms involved. Same with that one point, I think right after Ginger got bit and then she storms off at dinner.
More like mauled.
Yeah, more like mauled. You're right. But sorry. After Ginger got mauled and she storms off at dinner and then Bridget goes after her and the mom's like, "You're not like attached at the waist, or you're not attached to something like that." She's like, that's just such a mom thing to say. And also like that and a few other things showed that she was like concerned with how like overly involved they were in each other's lives, but that obviously her like gentle attempts at interference have been like, she's been stonewalled. So she's like doing her best, and they do a good job of establishing that and a lot of other things without any exposition. You just like pick it up from context.
Right. And there's that scene where they're burying, where they go back out to the freezer after bedtime, where Ginger and Bridget are trying to bury the bitchy girl, the bully girl in the ground. And there's a lot of really cool stuff in that. Like that, the Ginger's line where like a girl can only be a slut, a bitch, a tease, or the virgin next door will just coast on how the world works for how they'll get away with the murder.
And
my favorite line there for that scene is where Bridget's like, "If I wasn't here, would you eat her?" And she's like, "Ew, it'd be like fucking her."
Yeah, that was a lot of interesting back and forth. And then it's like, "And I feel equally confused as Bridget," which is like, is that a no? Like would you fuck her? Like, I don't know. I legitimately don't know.
I think it's weird how her mind immediately connects those two thoughts. It's like, okay, Ginger, whatever you say.
Meg, what would you say you are? A slut, a bitch, or a tease?
Wow. I guess maybe a bitch, because I'm really not a hypocrite.
I'm not really a bitch either.
I don't think I'm much of a bitch, but I'm definitely not a slut. And I don't think, and I am like way too buttoned up to be a tease. I'm very concerned about leaving people on.
You could also be the virgin next door. That's the fourth option, Ginger.
I mean, I am the virgin next door, which is, I'm the virgin next door then. Which,
I forgot about the virgin next
door. It's not a great option, but it's what's true to me. What are you?
Probably a bitch.
Yeah. What about you, Chris?
Oh, definitely a tease, obviously.
Oh, we're all different ones. This is why we get along. We're balanced. Yes. We just need a slot. We need a slot in the mix.
As far as the werewolf things getting, as far as puberty metaphors and all that other stuff, the next day we also see Jason as a werewolf, and he's covered in the most disgusting zits ever.
I loved that.
I was like, Ginger didn't get any of this.
He's still hot. But like, I liked how they had like multiple people, so you could sort of see it affecting different, that was interesting. You could see it affecting different people. But yeah, poor guy. He didn't take to it very well.
He didn't.
Oh, he was doing a number on him. It was gross.
And a tail. Well, she had a tail too, but it was kind of cute on her.
Yeah. Her tail was kind of cute. Well, that was the other thing. That was like the, when Bridget goes and like looks under her underwear, I was like, that like, see, like, and then it paid off the tail, and that like made everything funny, and like it brought it all together. But like,
you're like,
but at that point, like Ginger's pulling away and like Bridget's like really clingy, and then she's going, waiting until she's asleep and like lifting up her underwear and looking. And I like, that like gave me like a weird, like a stomach like clenching feeling. But then again, the fact that there was a tail, I was like, oh, that's what she was looking for. But before I realized what she was looking for, that was like an uncomfortable moment. And I think it was supposed to be.
It would definitely would have been a weirder scene if she did not have a tail. That's something you could definitely say.
and be like,
you're like, thank God you had the tail. Otherwise, like, yeah,
this is weird.
Just being a fucking perv.
Just imagine like Bridget literally saying out loud, ah, thank God she doesn't have a tail, which is the only reason why I've done this.
Yes, there's no other reason why I'd be perving in my sister's drawers.
So weird. You also have that scene where she's walking in. I think it's very soon after the mom, like, Ginger likes it when you let us do our own thing. When she walks in on her trying to cut the tail off, it's just like, it's another weird analogy too, where she literally walks in on her sister cutting herself, but it's a tail because she's just trying to be normal.
Yeah. And then when they tape it down, I think at one point they're taping it down in, I think, the locker room, and I was just like, the tension of someone walking in. Because at that point, like, Ginger's obviously getting more and more unhinged as the movie goes on.
Yeah.
And it's like, at that point, I was like, oh my God, if someone walks in, Ginger's gonna kill them. Like, literally kill them. Like, she's not gonna let him get, like, the time of her letting people get away with things is over. And so it was a relief when no one walked in.
Yeah. There's one scene that I think feels really weird and out of place with the rest of it, which is very soon after this, where Jason is attacking. So after we see Sam, he makes the cure out of the monk's hood, and he's like, all right, make sure you give it to Ginger because I'm not an idiot. Jason's attacking that kid in the park, and the kid is like, this is what happens when you deal with kid actors. 9 times out of 10, you do not get good ones. The kid's just like, help, please, someone let me go, sir. And Jason's just like kind of weirdly attacking him. It was such a, it felt like a scene where they were like, we need to show the cure working, so we need this scene, but it kind of felt like kind of tacked on, I thought.
And it also made sense that she would be too much of a pussy to do it to her sister without knowing if it would work.
Yeah.
You know, because she's so codependent, and like, she would want to kill her, but too bad she didn't just do that off the bat.
Yeah. Briefly say, I think that is like the kind of semi-tragedy of the movie, is it's like the whole movie she's trying to avoid the nuclear option and save her sister, and then it, which I get, which I think unrolls and unfolds in like a realistic way, then that ends up being like not an option. But as a character, you understand why Bridget tried to avoid that. Especially as a codependent sister, you understand why like people's lives seem matter less to you than like the people you care about, which is shouldn't, but like that's kind of the way humans work.
That's life.
Yeah. It is, but it's like, so just, it's like, oh, there's certain people that it's like I would do pretty much anything for, and like there's certain people that, you know, you'd hesitate to pee on if they were on fire.
Yeah.
And then you just have to like live with the fact that there's that conflict going on internally.
Well, it's also that thing where they say like one death is a tragedy, like 20 deaths is a statistic or something like that. I forget what the exact wording on the line is. But like if someone close to you dies, it's like the worst day ever. But if you hear like 35 dead in train crash in Kalamazoo, Michigan, you're like, oh wow, that's really sad.
You're right, it's almost too many people to care about, which is kind of insane that there's like kind of a cap on human suffering. But I feel like we have an internal cap or something.
All same with like school shootings and all that. It's like, you know, it's like, it's sad, but that's just kind of like,
no, you're definitely right. And I feel like that happens in movies and television a lot, where it's like things lose me when they're global. So like a good example would be like, which would be like Sherlock. In the first season, there's like different episodes where like the stakes are like high for the characters but low internationally. It's just like pretty much like life or death on like a small scale. But like the season 2 or 3, it's like, we've got to save the world. And I stop caring when it comes to like when someone's fictionally trying to save the world versus like trying to like save like their sister or like their dog or something like that. It's like, it's the bigger the stakes doesn't mean the more like emotional punches.
It's similar to like one of my many rants about the movie Us. I feel like Us is really good until it leaves those two households. Once it becomes a nationwide thing, I'm just like, what the hell? None of this makes a lick of sense. One thing I want to mention, this is one of the IMDb facts that just completely blew my mind, especially because we get into the guidance counselor scene where Bridget and Ginger are about to be called into the guidance counselor's office. Apparently, the PA voice person was an uncredited Lucy Lawless.
What?
Yeah. And two of the names that she calls to go to the guidance counselor's office are Theodore and Samuel Raimi.
Oh!
And I was like,
Raimi's.
Lucy Lawless just called Sam Raimi to the guidance counselor's office? What the hell is, what world are we living in?
That's weird.
And Sam Raimi's brother was in
Xena.
Yes, in Xena, but we've just watched Candyman, and he was he was like the bad boy boyfriend in one of like in an early scene, even though he almost always plays the nerd. It was funny to see him play like the, like, oh, he's like the greaser boyfriend, the ne'er-do-well.
Ted Raimi as the bad boy is such a funny concept.
A hilarious concept. He's like almost always
He's what's it in the Spider-Man movies? He's J. Jonah Jameson's nerdy assistant guy.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I was literally scrolling on IMDb for facts, and I read that one, and I was like, "Wait, what the what?"
That's funny.
I'm glad you told me that, because I'm glad to know that.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that Lucy Lawless partook in this production.
Yeah. At this point, Ginger now has blue eyes. They look really cool. And
they do look cool. Her whole evolution was cool.
Yeah.
Very well done.
Especially, like, I love when she's at the Halloween party and she has the full blonde hair and the full, like, half-wool face. It looks really cool.
And everyone's just like, oh, cool costume. Yeah.
She's lucky it's Halloween.
Yeah. But then she attacks the guidance counselor, and Bridget is just like, I don't know, I'll go get a mop, I guess. And I thought that was so cool, where she just opens the door, and it's just like clawed face. She's just like, he like got too close to the truth, I guess.
Had to go. I felt very, coming up next, it was that janitor. I felt bad about that.
That was the moral event horizon for her, I think, where it was like, even though it was fucked up to kill the guidance counselor, like, you could see it in the heat of the moment, and because she just got called in, and she's obviously, like, it's the full moon. You're willing to, like, give her a, like, homicide or, like, second-degree murder on that one. But when she just, like, straight-up murders that really nice janitor and then, like, kind of makes up all these excuses why she did it about him being a pervert, which doesn't seem... I also like that, too, because she's, like, saying it and it doesn't seem at all true. And, yeah. Like, her sister's kind of calling her out on that, and I liked that play.
Thing, because Ginger is, like, super overprotective of Bridget still, but it's still, like, she's doing it in all the wrong ways, where she's, like, she thinks Sam is gonna assault her, she thinks the janitor wants to assault Bridget, and it doesn't seem like any of it's true. Like, the janitor seems like just a kindly old dude.
No, and I liked that, because I think that kind of shows, like, her mental degradation and how she's going crazy.
Did she say something like that? She mentioned something about the janitor being creepy at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she might have. You might be right.
But, I didn't think it seemed true then either.
Yeah, it didn't seem true then either. But now it's, instead of her just making a passing comment, now it's, like, full-blown torture murder.
Yeah, she just, kills him in a terrible way for no reason. I think that's a good moment for Bridget as well, because she's very much, like, there's no excuse there. There's no, like, she, like, wasn't there for when she killed the guidance counselor, and she...
It's probably similar.
Well, that's what I think, that was, like, kind of a testament to Emily Perkins' acting, because I felt like she did a good job of portraying, like, extreme skepticism, but, like, willing to buy in when she finds the body of the guidance counselor, and she's like, okay, but you could just see that she's not really believing Ginger's story, or but she's willing to kind of go along with it. But then when she kills the guidance counselor, it's just right in her face. And with a guy who had previously saved her from, like, a dangerous interaction with Jason when he was, like, mid-transformation, and he, like, stuck her in a closet and the janitor came and helped. So they did a good job of making it the janitor someone that you saw around a few times, and he was obviously, like, a kindly old man and harmless. And that was something I thought was a good job of using someone who was, like, essentially kind of like a bit character. And I didn't see it necessarily. I didn't predict that Ginger would kill him, but by the time she did, I cared that she did.
Yeah, I agree. I think this scene's a really good scene to show Bridget's character growth. And like I said, it's been very subtle, where she's, like, doing things outside of Ginger. Now she's having her own agency. She's doing her own thing. She's becoming more independent. And there's that scene where they're literally now fully at opposition with each other, where Ginger's like, hey, we can be our own pack. You know, we had our promise, out by 16 or dead on the scene. What's the rest of it?
Out by 16 or dead on the scene, but together forever.
United against life as we know it. Ginger said, I would die for you. And Bridget goes, no, you said you'd die with me because you had nothing better to do.
Yep.
And I just love that.
She is. She's such a fucking bitch.
She's like a teenage girl. Like, she's a bitch. But, like, yeah, it's like the other girl just takes her too seriously. And it's just like, it's an interesting, like, interplay for sure.
Yeah.
Ginger was always kind of a bitch, but then now she's like a psycho bitch.
Yeah, it definitely goes from 0 to 100. I mean, it doesn't go 0 to 100. It's a very steady ramp up, but by now she's at 100 and she's like full blown. The blue eyes, she has the claws. She's like, being a werewolf is fucking awesome. You kill people. And you just, like, she equates it to, like, touching herself, and it's just like, this is a little out there, man. Okay. So let's go to the Halloween party. This is when we get the mom line saying, well, we'll just blow up the house and go start somewhere over, just us girls. And where Ginger tries to, like, assault Sam.
Kill Sam.
And she has extra dog nipples, which is weird.
terrifying. That yeah, is really weird.
It's like she has the cool blonde hair, the cool wool face, and you're like, whoa, she's all like dressed fancy. But then you're like, ah, she has six nipples. That's no bueno.
Yeah. And to Julia's point about Jennifer's Body being a semi-shameless ripoff, watching that scene did remind me of the scene in Jennifer's Body with Chip when Jennifer goes after him and he like kind of goes for it. And it's like, which is like, whatever. Like, I didn't really like that he went for it. And then in this, it's like, he's not even dating Bridget.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even seem to necessarily have like a romantic interest thing. In each yeah. other, but he's still not into the monster chick. And he's kind of like trying to be like not aggressive, but not into it. And I thought that was like a much better way to play it. Whereas in Jennifer's Body, it's like, she goes up to her best friend's ex-boyfriend of like a day and he immediately goes for it, even though his girlfriend's been trying to warn her about how like off the rails Jennifer is. And that, again, stuff that just seems like it is written for the purpose of like developing a plot yeah. rather than like true to a character. And, like, that's definitely a pet peeve of mine. And I felt like Ginger Snaps did a good job of her going after Sam, definitely as revenge against her sister. But Sam, like, even though he doesn't have any, like, he's not dating Bridget, mm-hmm. he's still like not into it, which honestly, why would he be? He's like, she's terrifying.
She's terrifying.
And she's a werewolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. He knows it. Yep.
It is weird because there's a section where he seems like he's almost hypnotized by her, where he's just like, Ginger, stop. Ginger, get off me. But then finally, like, snaps out. He's like, get off, and like actually throws her off.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, what the fuck, you know?
And it made you just like him more.
Yeah.
Like,
it did.
Yeah.
It made you like, I like felt like, again, that he was a good character and one who understood the stakes. He recognized her as like a major threat and he wasn't going to be super aggressive because that would be the bad call for yeah. the way she was. But he also obviously wasn't into it. And mm-hmm. like I thought he was playing it pretty well.
Yeah. And then we get Bridget shows up and she convinces Ginger to go back home where there's more monkshood because she swaps blood with her. They do like almost like a reenactment. Even though we didn't see the original suicide pact, we know they cut their hands and did the thing. And now they do that a second time, but now to make Bridget a werewolf. And there's another great line where Bridget has where she goes, you wrecked everything for me that isn't about you, now I am you. I was like, oh,
that brought us to Hannibal.
In Hannibal there's a really similar line between Will and Hannibal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it's like,
and she's in Hannibal,
and so she's in cool. Hannibal. Yeah. So I think that's definitely, I feel like, inspired, like an homage for yeah. sure.
And I love too, they have the scene where they go outside and Sam like smacks Ginger across the face with a shovel and she's like, I'm not gonna let you be a werewolf. And she's like, you idiot, I was just trying to get her to the cure. Oh, my bad.
Yeah, I like that too, because it's like normal, just like, whoops.
And that's a miscommunication I can get behind, mm-hmm. because that's one that makes sense. Like, she has a plan in her head, why would she say it out loud? He'd have no way of knowing, and she'd also have no way of telling him, because obviously it was kind of on the fly. And then it's like, his reaction is logical given what he knows yep. and what he feels, mm-hmm. and her plan is logical given what she knows and she feels. So neither of them seem like an idiot or like they're ruining each other's like plans.
Right.
And it was a good reveal too, because when she did the blood exchange, I'm like, no, why would you want to be one of those like monsters that's terrible? And then to realize that it was all a ploy yep. because she knew the cure worked, mm-hmm. that like worked on multiple levels, I thought.
Absolutely. So they go back to the Ginger, the Fitzgerald house. I have no clue where the dad is. He's just out, I guess. Who cares?
To the VFA. I mean, not the VFA, whatever. Prisoner of Foreign War.
Oh, VFW.
VFW. Wow, that was hilarious. That was like you were that's like you were playing Scattergories or something.
So we get, they are able to make more cure. It's kind of funny. They make the cure in like legit 5 seconds. It's just like, you just throw it in the thing. You light the thing. Boom, you got cure.
Use some heroin tricks.
It kind of seemed like heroin-y based on my movie knowledge of heroin.
Yeah. Based on that one episode of Breaking Bad.
Or also, I was thinking Pulp Fiction.
Requiem for a Dream. There's a few.
There's a few that we're cribbing off of.
But poor Sam was not long for this world, my boy.
I was very sad when he died.
I really wanted him to live because I felt at that point he'd earned it. Mm-hmm. Then I also felt like obviously him dying made sense narratively.
But I was sad.
But I cared. I did care.
One of the IMDb facts that's randomly there, it has nothing to do with the actual movie, there's one fact that's like, Sam surviving the attack and becoming a werewolf hunter is a popular topic in fan fiction of this movie. And I was like, that's weird and oddly specific.
Yeah.
But okay.
I actually haven't, but I would. That's just like my default is go to TV tropes, go to fan fiction. Yep. I'll learn what I can.
I think the way he dies too is really weirdly haunting, where he's just like doing that weird hitched breath. He's just like,
I know. It seemed like a way someone would die.
Yeah, it would seem like really awful.
Well, it was like the first thing, and then you're like, oh, I guess he's dead. And then it's like, oh, he's not dead yet. Oh. Like, it was like,
and then it's like Ginger's like using him as a trap to lure Bridget, it seems like.
And then Bridget seems like she's going to give in to be like, fine, I'll just be with you, Ginger. I'll drink blood, but vomits the blood.
Yeah, that was funny.
That was funny. I liked it because it definitely wasn't like a direct parallel. It was like, oh, I'm Bridget and Julia's Ginger. It wasn't like that at all. But there were like some things that I felt like you could relate to, just probably on a human level of like wanting to like kind of emulate someone or be like someone. And then obviously in this movie, it's on a much larger scale. So you're like vomiting blood or you're like, it's just like, I thought that it was like brought to like a different, like an absurd degree.
It's almost like her body is forcing her to be her own person kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is like, so she knows how like wrong it is deep down. It's good. It's good.
Yeah. She's becoming her authentic self.
Yeah.
And I liked that she was, she became her authentic self and it was not motivated by a guy.
Yeah.
Which is like, I feel like in most coming of age things with girls, it's like, it's motivated by a romantic interest, typically a man, but like,
and like because they didn't take the romantic angle with him, it made you kind of be like, oh, I hope something happens with them rather than like roll your eyes, which I normally do.
Yeah.
It was sorry, go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, we've talked about this before, I think, but there's almost no nuance in a horror movie romance. They're all exactly the same story just put into every single horror movie. So when a movie is like, no, we're not doing that, screw that, I'm always like, thank you.
Yes, and I'm always way more invested in that. Like, look, for that, it was like when I think when they were making The Cure in the closet, I was like, even though logically I was like, okay, he's probably going to die. Like that, just like, I imagine that's what's going to happen.
And he was brave.
And he was very brave. And also I liked him before they went in. He was like, how we just use the cure on you and leave? And she's like, no. And he's like, but like, that was like, the question came from a completely natural place. And that was probably what they should have done. But I understand like why it didn't happen. But I liked that choice in the character.
Yeah. It also wasn't framed as like a, you and me, we'll just run away together. It was more just like,
no,
just save yourself and let's go.
Let's get out of here. I got the impression as it went on that the transformation was permanent. Like, so she, like, it seemed like the guy who got hit by the car didn't, like, he was doing that for, like, or he, like, yeah, it was he, because uncircumcised penis. It's like that you turn into that and that's what you are. I think that will do. Chris, is that correct?
I'm or what do you think? Not sure. I think it's not made clear in this one, but I think in the sequel, I think it's said that you turn, it's essentially like a month long process, but after the full moon, you basically come back to normalcy and then go through the whole month long process again. I could be wrong. I actually haven't seen the sequel. I want to, but
I generally avoid sequels except in the case of 5 Friday the 13th movies.
From what I've heard, both sequels to Ginger Snaps are both really good. It's actually one of the rare franchises where all the movies in it are good. I just haven't seen it. The second takes off very shortly after this, and the third one is randomly like in the 1800s, and it's a prequel with both Catherine Isabel and Emily Perkins as sisters again.
That's funny.
Yeah,
maybe we should watch it.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get back on topic.
So we're in the basement.
Yes.
Sam, we're dead.
Sam, oh, he's it's a shame he's dead now.
And
he's,
I really, like, wish he wasn't. R.I.P.
Rip. Press 7 to pay respects, or drop an F to pay respects.
Drug dealer. He did seem like a solid drug dealer. He also seemed like a pretty good botanist. And I'm just glad that the mother is nowhere to be seen. So that way she's not in this mortal danger.
Yeah, she's safe. She's at the Halloween party having a blast.
Yeah, she's probably passing out cookies at the Halloween party.
And we go into the Ginger and Bridget's room, and Bridget has both the cure and the knife that Ginger used to cut, we're trying to use to cut her tail off. And she has that line, to another great line that she is, where she yells at her. She says, I'm not dying in this room with you, which is just like, again, that's what their pact was essentially. And she's like, nope, this is, I'm finally like literally severing ties with my codependency to my frankly kind of abusive sister, even if she wasn't a werewolf.
Yeah, you didn't see much before, but you're just like, what's going on with these two bitches?
Yeah.
And I think they did,
like, she's a bitch, but they seem more equal. Equally paired at that point, and then it's obviously way exaggerated once she becomes werewolf.
And I felt like in hindsight, to me, it seemed like Ginger was really depressed, and Bridget was probably like depressed, but not depressed at that level, but just very attached to and dependent with, like, had a codependency with her sister. So Ginger seemed like fairly suicidal, and Bridget was kind of, I feel like being strong-armed into joining her on that. Yeah. And then it's like,
she's too weak.
And she was too weak. And that's also like, there's certain scenes where you feel like an innate sense of like discomfort, because you feel like Bridget's, and I don't think it's Ginger's doing it on purpose, but like Ginger's kind of like the alpha of the two of them. And Bridget's kind of just always trying to keep up or like be her equal. And that could have ended very tragically in a different type of movie.
Yeah. And I do really appreciate, I do like the fact that at the end, Bridget has the knife and the cure and essentially decides to use the knife, because she basically sees Ginger's too far gone. Even if I cure her, this is not...
What then?
What then? So let me just use this knife and sort of get it over with. They made it seem like it could have been not her decision, but I feel like it's telling that her instinct was to stab the knife, to put that hand forward and not the cure hand.
Yeah. And it was a decision to like have an empowering moment when she's been disempowered from that whole dynamic her whole life.
Absolutely.
At this point, though, I'm sure she could like try to replicate it, but at this point, Sam's dead. I'm not sure how much of the monk's wood they have left. And yeah, exactly. Like, the sister seems like past the point of no return. If you use the cure on her, what then? Who knows if she's too far gone? And then you've used the last of the cure. Mm-hmm. And then what about yourself? And then you're going to become a monster. And like, can you replicate the cure? Can you like, there's all those questions. And I think like,
she probably couldn't even touch it after she was a werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the other girl, like if you touched it.
So I think that was like a very, like, which ironic, it's obviously werewolf story, but like a very human element to it. And then also like putting herself first for once, because the whole movie, and it's kind of obvious from their interactions that probably her whole life she's been in, not even in Ginger's shadow, because she seems
up Ginger's
like,
ass.
Up Ginger's ass. Yeah. She seems really comfortable. Like she was, that was her comfort zone. She had like no resentment until like, she didn't seem to have any sort of simmering resentment or anything like that.
Strong-arming her even.
She's weak-willed.
Again, you don't see much before she turns. Mm-hmm. But it did seem like they were essentially equals then. I mean, we saw like one's mousy, one's more ballsy.
It didn't seem like
there was an inherent, like one was under the other's thumb at first. But like, obviously that wasn't booked in the movie.
And they do a good job too of like, obviously Ginger gets her period and then she gets mauled by this terrible beast. And then obviously everything unfolds, but it's from the mom's perspective. And for a while from Ginger's perspective, it's that Bridget's jealous and like Ginger's growing up and she's interested in boys and her body's changing and you're still like obsessed with your sister and frumpy. And so from other people's perspective, it was just a very different dynamic, which is obviously how it could have been if this was just like some teen drama instead of like a werewolf coming of age horror movie.
Especially because like there's some scenes at the beginning where Bridget has the giant jacket on. She almost looks like that kid from A Christmas Story, you know, where she's clearly covered up. And now she's like fully like into her own power. She's being like, I'm making the final say in this. Mm-hmm. I'm putting myself first. It's a very subtle but very cool character journey for her, and I just think it's great.
I agree, and I think that this movie does a good job of emphasizing something that I feel like sometimes gets lost in fiction, which is that a strong female character doesn't have to be physically strong. Mm-hmm. Because Bridget is like small and she's like a smaller woman, and she's not. It's a lot of like mental dexterity, and that there's something, but she's not like flipping tables over and like performing feats of strength. I feel like sometimes like the idea of a strong female character, the idea of like a physical strength gets introduced in fiction a lot, which I'm not like, it's not really good or bad, but I feel like it really can be diminishing, because obviously a person who isn't physically strong can still be like emotionally and mentally very strong. And I think that that was something that was represented in this, which often I feel like is underrepresented.
For sure. It's probably my second favorite werewolf movie of all time behind Dog Soldiers.
We've got to watch that.
Never heard of that.
He told me it's on YouTube for free, so we got to watch it.
It's literally, it's much more close to like Aliens or Predator, where it's a bunch of British and Scottish soldiers going up against a pack of werewolves.
Oh, that sounds great.
And it's a lot of fun. My boy Spoon.
Oh, we got to watch it maybe tomorrow.
I liked American Werewolf.
American Werewolf in London's good.
American Werewolf in London.
I like that. But like, you know, not like, I don't know. I haven't ranked. weird, but I liked it.
I liked that. That was weird and funny and a good soundtrack. And I also felt like him being haunted by his best friend who was like steadily deteriorating mm-hmm. and rotting was like a cool move. And it was also darkly funny. So that was also like speaks tone. That was a good tone.
That's the problem with werewolf movies. They can either be, which is what Ginger Snaps subverts pretty well. You can either have them take place over the course of over a month or one night. Because what do you do when they're not a werewolf?
Yeah.
That's why I really like the sort of subtle change in Ginger over the course of a month, because it takes care of that problem where it's like, oh, she's never not a werewolf. She's just not fully a werewolf yet.
Yeah, I like that too. Because I guess that like makes the werewolf kind of like a weird, like not my favorite creature.
Yes.
You know, like I like some of it, but it's not like...
And some things like, again, embarrassing that admission, but like Teen Wolf, for example, they just obviously during the full moon, it's like they like have to transform or whatever, but they make it so they can like do werewolfy stuff the whole month because otherwise it would be boring. But you're right. It's like when there's a once a month kind of limit on their superpowers, like that does make for like a pretty limited creature feature. That's better suited for a character that has a lot more going on and that this is just part of their life. And then if you have a story going on, then obviously that there's going to be some sort of inconvenience where that becomes like a bigger plot point. And in this, I think that was another solid move they made in focusing on Bridget instead of focusing on Ginger, because then they're focusing on the sister who's figuring things out and then like making another ally and trying to figure out how to cure her sister as her sister realizes that she doesn't want to be cured. Yeah. And that adds like an interesting tension between
her them. Story is technically, it's not the most quote unquote interesting story, but it is in, as we were talking off mic, and also people who listen to my last podcast know I was talking about Midsommar and how I think all the characters are very passive protagonists who just kind of float through the movie. Bridget is anything but. She is constantly driving action forward. She's constantly moving forward. So her actions dictate the plot in some ways. Even though she is reacting to Ginger somewhat, she's never just sitting back and letting whatever Ginger happen. She's like, okay, how do I stop it? Yeah. Boom, I got to keep going forward. Oh, it's a setback. How do I pivot from this? How do I move forward again?
I like, because even though in her interactions with Ginger, it seems like she's like the more passive partner. After Ginger's been bit and Bridget wants to go to the hospital when they're getting tampons, Bridget's trying to get her out of the truck and stop smoking the weed. Bridget's like knocking on the window and she's making out with a dude and like being like, get the fuck out of there. You don't know what you're going to do. You don't know what you're going to do with this guy. Like Ginger's locking her in the bathroom because she doesn't want her to kill people. I'm sorry, Bridget's locking Ginger in the bathroom. Yeah. So even though like she's like mousy and like generally kind of like subordinate to her sister, seems like that's kind of the history there. She still is like, what the fuck? I want to protect my sister. I care about my sister. I also don't want her to kill other people or other dogs. And it just, that makes her a much more interesting character. And also, again, I feel like that's something that horror movies can get wrong, and that's when they're not so good, is just kind of losing the human element, which is any person, even like a huge dickbag, if they had like if the closest person to them was undergoing this like horrific, monstrous transformation, you would be doing something about it. Even a super passive person, people like what you would be doing would vary. It might even just be as little as like telling your mom, something like that. I think almost everyone would do something. And a lot of movies and television shows just like have characters be like unrealistically passive and not do anything just for the sake of like forwarding the plot or forwarding the miscommunication trope.
Yeah, miscommunications is, that's the worst way to progress a plot, probably.
I completely agree. Julia mentioned earlier, a good miscommunication in this that was between Sam and Bridget when Sam thought Bridget was sacrificing herself to be werewolf with her sister, and Bridget was really doing a long con to get her sister back to the house to get her cured. And that was like, that made sense.
Yeah, that was good, but you know. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Professional Horror Podcast. I'd like to thank my guests, Megan and Julia, once again for being on the show with me, because they're awesome. They rock. You guys are welcome on the show anytime. Love to have you guys on again. And thank you for being here with us as well. I love this movie. I love talking about movies, and I hope you loved hearing us talk about this movie as well as a few sidetracks, I'm sure. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at @the_don_17 and on Instagram at @professionalhorror. And if you have any comments or suggestions you want to throw my way, email me at professionalhorror@gmail.com. And follow and review the show on whatever crap you get podcasts on, you know, all the apps, Apple, Spotify. It's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of admin at the end of episodes. And I will be back. And I will be back in 2 weeks with another spooky Halloween episode with another guest. But until then, stay scary, but keep it professional.